Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Week 1 ranks. Let's talk to the pros. Welcome in, everybody, to Fantasy Pros. This is the Fantasy Football Podcast. It is me, Joey P. Joe Pizzapia. With me today is Pat Fitzmaurice. We're going to break down the running backs and wide receiver rankings versus the ECR that Pat Fitzmaurice has been working so diligently on, just like we will every single Wednesday. And today, we've got a very special guest to help us. In fact, he's royalty. He is Lord Reebs of all of fantasy. He is Rich Rebar joining us from Sharp Football. We're going to talk to Rich, get some of his takes on some of the ranks here, as well as talk to Fitzy about the guys he likes more than ECR and the guys maybe not so much. And we are approaching the season. It's feeling like the season has really begun. We had some waivers starting to run. We've got lineups being set. I've already fielded 3 trade proposals this morning. Rich, this feels like football to me. How about you?
Yeah, we finally made it. And, you know, it's exciting. So we've been talking about not only the same thing for the last 6 months. We can move off of that. But, you know, we get that chance to just kind of enjoy football again. And, you know, that's where I think is most exciting about this, because I'm someone, I feel like my strength as a fantasy analyst is, you know, being able to recalibrate, being ahead of trends and things that are shifting in season. And so I'm excited to get kind of that ball rolling. And week one is the reveal of all of these questions we have. And there are so many questions that we've had all summer, and we're going to finally start to get the answers to those starting on Thursday even.
Speaking of questions, I got one for you. Who's the player that you're so invested in that when he gets hurt, it's going to be a tough night at the Rebar house?
Probably Russell Wilson. He is the guy like I definitely drafted probably the most of, just because he's like, you know, that firewall quarterback, like right after like the top 6 guys. And man, yeah. And he always would just be available if you, because you could kind of wait on him, but still not like fully like wait and do the whole late round quarterback thing. So yeah, Russ, we're invested in a lot of Russell Wilson here.
All right. Well, we'll have to get you a Let's Ride t-shirt. Fitz, speaking of that, that's a good question for you as well. Who's the player that if the worst should befall them, that it's going to be a very difficult season for old Pat Fitzmaurice here?
Probably Mike Williams. I think he might be my most heavily rostered player. So, yeah, man, don't speak it into existence.
No, I won't. Justin Jefferson, so many Justin Jefferson shares. I can't even handle
it. What a humble brag.
Well, it's not a humble brag. I have so many shares that if and when anything went wrong, that would be it. I could just, you know, just take off the rest of the year, be fine. I have so many shares that I got myself a Justin Jefferson shirt. It's this cool shirt with the whole Vikings logo and the Jefferson on the back with the 18. It wasn't a jersey, it was the shirt but it's got the two-tone sleeves. So I'm going to rock that bad boy as soon as it gets here. Very excited about that. So we want to know who your players are that you're invested in too. And if you're hanging out with us, watch on the YouTube channel, you can always drop that in the chat too. I want to know all of that. I love interacting with you guys on our YouTube and of course on Discord also. And remember, this is the time of year too where you got to set your lineups, you got to get everything ready to go. And my playbook cheat sheets are the right tool to help you do all that. One of the most useful and popular features of my playbook every football season is the cheat sheets tool. So all you do is you just sync it up to your league and get instant waiver and lineup advice, combining your favorite experts, weekly, rest of season, or dynasty rankings into one lovely customizable cheat sheet. And rankings for all positions are conveniently shown on the same page. So there's no need to toggle back and forth and all that nonsense. We give it all to you right there. And of course, that cheat sheets feature can be gotten for you over at fantasypros.com/myplaybook. I actually just finished yesterday getting all of my many teams into my playbook so I could manage them from Fantasy Pros, because it's a game changer. It's a lifesaver. I love it. You'll love it too. Go check it out. There you go. There's my pitch. All right, let's go and start with the running backs here. And let's start with an old favorite, Saquon Barkley. The matchup is here against the Tennessee Titans this week. Now, right now, he is the RB12, but Pat Fitzmaurice, you've got him as RB8 in half PPR. And of course, if you're trying to check this out, you can go to fantasypros.com/rankings to see all the week one rankings, and you can sort by the different experts if you like as well. So let's talk about Saquon. I know it's been a lot of positives in training camp, a lot of positive vibes, but now the rubber hits the road. Now we're going to see just how the usage of Saquon is going to be, at least for 1 week of 2022. So why are you higher than consensus on Barkley this week, Pat?
Well, you mentioned that the vibes have been pretty good, Joe, and I think people have been like growing increasingly optimistic about the kind of season Barkley is going to have, that he's going to get back to the old Saquon of 2019. And I'm kind of optimistic, too. And I think maybe the reason the ECR is surprisingly low and not top 10 is maybe that the Titans allowed the second fewest rushing yards last year. And I think they were one of only four teams to allow under 4 yards per carry. But part of the reason I think they were sort of lower, like as far as running back fantasy points allowed, was because they only gave up 10 touchdowns to running backs last year. I don't know. I just like touchdowns aren't always that sticky. They gave up 20 touchdowns to running backs the year before. So I'm not too worried about that. We know the Giants are going to use Saquon a lot. They're going to use him creatively in the passing game. So I see him as a top 10 running back this week.
All right. So consensus has him an RB1. You've got him inside the top 10. Rich, what are your thoughts on Saquon Barkley heading into this week? I know you're still working on the rankings and figuring all that out. But when you're looking at Saquon in this matchup, do you think he is closer to that top 10 group or more in that fringy RB1 class?
Yeah, I think it's probably like a back end RB1. I mean, just based on volume, the Giants, you know, depth, just they really don't have a lot of bodies here to really supplant Saquon from being a three down back. He probably gets a little more juice in full point PPR because of his receiving role and the hodgepodge of receivers that they also have there. One thing to think about, though, is like historically, this is a terrible spot to kind of like invest in your running back. When we have a team with a sub 19 point team total, they're 6 point underdogs on the road. And then also the look ahead, this game looks like it's projecting right now, and it's only Wednesday, so keep this in mind, is that there could be severe thunderstorms projected for this game too during it. So it could be kind of a sloppy game overall. It's just something to keep in mind. And like Pat brought up the Titans, you know, kind of front seven. They did lose Harold Landry. So, I mean, there's one less body to kind of contend with. They were also excellent against backs out of the backfield last year too. That played his role at the touchdowns. They were eighth in receiving points allowed to running backs too. So, I mean, that's something to kind of keep like an earmark into. But I've been very pro Saquon the entire summer. I think he's been one of the best values, and we saw that consistently play out over the course of summer when he opened as a third round pick and basically closed as a fringe, like round 1-2 turn pick. So I'm looking for that bounce back season. He's only 25 years old still, man.
Me too. I'm only 25 also, which I feel like I got so much more football ahead of me. You know, Rich, I'm with you. I see Saquon the same way, as a great value this year and a risk that I'm far more willing to take. And I have taken. If Saquon should have an absolute smash game week one, would you consider shopping him around, just kind of seeing what you could get considering the last 2 years of all the injuries?
No, because I think it was mostly, you know, fluky. I mean, the ACL was something you can't do. And then last year was like a complete fluke. We saw him come back. He had that monster game against the Saints. He looked like Saquon of old. Then he just steps on a teammate the week next. And like we've seen guys, like now that we have injury analysis in the fantasy space, talk about the high ankle sprain and what it's done. And by the time he even came back, dealing with the high ankle sprain, the Giants roster was just gutted. Mm-hmm. I mean, Sterling Shepard was hurt. Kadarius Toney was hurt. He played the final six games without Daniel Jones. And you say, oh, well, Daniel Jones wasn't good. Look at the guys they played outside of Daniel Jones last year. Without Daniel Jones on the field last year, the Giants averaged under 4 yards per play on offense. Like that in the year of 2021, like that is just absurd the way football is played to be that bad. So
wasn't there a kneel down, Rich, on like second down?
It was a QB. It was like a 3rd-and-7 QB sneak run, like to create punting room. It's, I mean,
was that against the Bears? In that game against the Bears, like they didn't even try.
Yeah, it was towards the end. I remember the crowd just absolutely unleashing hell on them. It was pretty spectacular.
They basically quit, but I think it's been more just sort of fluky, like what's happened to him. And like, you're going to have that at the running back position. So, hey.
All right. Well, let's see what we have at the running back position with James Conner. Pat, you have him at RB11 consensus, a little lower. I have him at RB15. So you've got him nearly as a top 10 guy. Consensus has him as an RB2. So why are you excited about him? I know this is a high point total here playing against Kansas City Chiefs. But what is your thoughts here on Connor heading into this first contest?
Well, I'll be honest, Joe, he was one of the harder guys to rank this week. We just don't know what the usage is going to look like. And we saw him used as a true three down back after Chase Edmonds got hurt last year, but we probably are not going to see that again this year. I just don't think that they can afford to give Connor that sort of workload, a guy who's run into some injury problems in the past. So if they do want to use him in that sort of role and throw to him, hopefully it's not like early James Conner usage in 2021 when they just didn't throw to him at all. Because the Chiefs have given up the third most receiving yards to running backs last year, and I think the most in 2020. So there is some opportunity there if they do throw to him. You mentioned the big game total. I think it's the highest total of week one at, 54 points. You know, I just, like, I've got Connor just a tick above DeAndre Swift, Aaron Jones, and Leonard Fournette. I mean, you could kind of order those four guys. Personally, I could order them any four ways, but I've got Connor just above those other three.
I know we said that touchdowns aren't sticky necessarily, but my goodness, they all stuck to Connor last year, Rich. almost like a lollipop to a toddler, it feels like. So when you're trying to evaluate Connor this week, obviously it is a lot based on touchdowns and how that usage was last year. It is early in the season, though. Sometimes we see guys, you know, get some other reps or share the reps early on as they're starting to ramp up. Is there any concern in that sense with Connor, with Eno Benjamin around and Williams around in this backfield, or is it wheels up for Connor in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some, you know, fragility there because we just don't know what the passing usage is going to be. But I mean, I'm still a little bit more on the optimistic side, particularly for week one. Like you said, it is early in the season. I think they do want to manage Connor over the bulk of the season because he's a guy that's never played a full season in the NFL. But I think when you look at the Arizona layout for week one, not just having the high game total, having to chase points in this game, I mean, they're coming in with injuries to Zach Ertz, injuries to with Rondale Moore. They obviously aren't going to have DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, I feel like this is a game where, like, just by default, James Conner is one of their best players, and he's going to be kind of vital for them kind of keeping pace here in a potentially high scoring game. And then also, like Pat alluded to, I mean, the Chiefs have been a team we've targeted for running back play, not just for last year, but for multiple seasons in a row. And last year they were 30th in yards per carry allowed to running backs, also while ranking 29th in receiving points allowed per game to running backs, because, you know, they're frequently in that positive game script and teams are, you know, forced to kind of, you know, throw, you know, in the second half of these games. We know that Eno Benjamin's not a threat near the goal line, so if there are going to be scoring opportunities, it'll be Connor. I'm actually a little higher on Connor than the guy we just talked about, Saquon.
Let's take a quick break in the action and tell you about Owner's Box. The NFL season is right around the corner, and Owner's Box is going bigger than ever this year. They just launched their $100,000 Sunday Smash Contest for week one and are giving every user a free $10 entry. Superflex Fantasy Football and Owner's Box offers a unique twist to your standard daily fantasy sports formats. Owner's Box prides itself on maximizing what fantasy players love the most, and that's offense. They've removed the kicker, the defense position, and of course added a super flex spot. This makes for a new layer of strategy when building a lineup with the option to add a second quarterback for your roster. Take advantage of the super flex roster slot to build creative lineups while staying under the salary cap. Owner's Box Week 1 NFL Daily Fantasy Contest offer a grand prize of $20,000 to the first place winner and over $100,000 in total prizes. Head over to ownersbox.com/home/fantasypros. Again, that's ownersbox.com/home/fantasypros to sign up and claim your free entry today over at Owner's Box. And now, back to the action. Let's go to Antonio Gibson. I can't wait to hear this one because Pat, who's been talking up Antonio Gibson the last 2 weeks, I feel like, on the show, all of a sudden he's got him in RB21, but the ECR's got him at 16. So, Pat, what happened here? I thought you were the truther when it came to Antonio Gibson. I understand this week, you know, it is week one, and I understand it's at home, and, you know, you've got McKissick potentially there, but no Brian Robinson. So why so low this week against Jacksonville? Is it because that newly formed Jacksonville front that might be a little bit better than people realize?
I know. How did I wind up being the fade Antonio Gibson guy?
I don't want to do this show anymore. I'm so depressed about it.
I know. I've been honking this guy's horn for weeks. yeah, like, I mean, I guess it's just like a sort of tentative ranking. Maybe like with no Brian Robinson there, I should just be sort of in on him from the start. But, you know, we know Carson Wentz doesn't really throw to his running backs that often. And of course, when it's a passing down, they're going to have J.D. McKissick in there if it's any sort of hurry up situation. So like just sort of the early down work in a game like this where, you know, projecting as kind of a lowish total. I'm just like not super excited about sticking him in almost, you know, I guess high end wide receiver or running back two territory. Just feels like more of a hedge play this week.
Okay. I got to tell you, I got my first share last night in a draft of Antonio Gibson. I thought Pat would be so proud. And then I started to put the show sheets together today and say, what's going on here? Something's not right. Why is Pat all of a sudden sour? What did I miss?
I will say, Joe, though, as running back 21, you're probably rolling him out, at least in a flex spot.
You're still starting him. Yes, yeah, that is, I mean, that it's is just correct, of course.
Maybe a guy I'm not going in on in a DFS lineup. Well,
right. And it also comes down to a little bit of roster construction, too, about, you know, if you're playing him as your flex, you feel okay. If you're playing as your RB2, then you might want to build in a little bit more upside to your flex. So always remember that. You know, these rankings are telling you something, and they're telling you about roster construction at the end of the day. That's what they should be telling you anyway. Rich Rebar, tell me about Antonio Gibson and your thoughts on him in week one.
I mean, this just kind of reverts to what he was the first 2 years of his career, right? Like with no Brian Robinson, he's going to be a game script sensitive, touchdown dependent running back, which is an RB2. You know, so that's what we do. We need him to fall into the end zone. Now, I would say like his situation and game environment would be more of a positive signal. He's a home favorite, right? Like if you're going to be in that role, like you want it to at least be set up as a home favorite. There's really nothing about like the matchup that stands out. The Jaguars were actually pretty good against the run on a per play basis. It's just that they were such a bad team. They faced the 24th most carries in the NFL. And it kind of just like pushed up that all that raw production that they gave up and counting stats. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, we know what we have in Antonio Gibson. We know he's not going to play long down and distance passing situations. We hope he falls into the box. And if he doesn't reach the end zone, you're probably just going to be looking at like a bunch of empty yardage.
All right. We can come back from the upside down and talk about AJ Dillon, who of course, Pat, is higher on than consensus and rightfully so. You have him as RB18, despite the fact, obviously, Aaron Jones, and he will be sharing a lot of the workload in Green Bay. ECR has him at RB22, so four spots higher. I know this is something I've gotten a lot of questions, actually, on A.J. Dillon, starting him this week as a flex, and people are asking me how I feel about it. I feel like, look, I think there's going to be enough volume here that you feel pretty good about him. But again, it's coming down to let's figure out what this Packers offense is, and we really haven't seen that yet. So, Fitz, in your opinion, what's the best outlook that you could put forward here for A.J. Dillon in this first game?
That the Packers get up, stay up, run it 30 times or so, and you know, Dillon gets 18, 19 of those carries, maybe 16 to 19. So we saw last year down the stretch, like over the second half of the regular season, that when they played together in their final eight regular season games, Dillon averaged like 3.5 more carries a game than Aaron Jones did. And he was also getting more of the goal line snaps. So I think that trend is going to kind of continue here. And we've talked about this, Joe, like with no Davante Adams, they are going to run at a higher rate this year. Like, I don't think there's any questioning that. And their defense is going to allow it because this is a really good defense on paper. Yeah.
And they got better year over year personnel wise too, which was impressive because that was a very good and underrated unit in terms of consistency, especially for fantasy points too.
And then they add two guys from the Georgia National Championship defense, which is just insanely good. So, I think it's if they do get in a situation, and I think they are slight road favorites in this game against the Vikings, like they're going to be in a position where they can play ball control. And so, like, I wouldn't hesitate to lean in with Dylan. Even though he is going to be in a two-headed backfield, it's a backfield that should produce a lot of fantasy points.
Yeah, they are 1.5-point favorites here on the road. Rich, I know this is a crowded backfield right now, but as Fitz was pointing out, there's certainly room for both Dylan and Aaron Jones to work. How do you feel about Dylan? Is he a top 20 back in your opinion this week?
I mean, he's another one of those guys that we probably need a touchdown from him. Like, we don't know what his receiving role is going to be. So, I mean, if you don't get that touchdown, like, you're probably looking at a guy that was just kind of like a really pedestrian, like baseline level performer. But this is kind of the layout you would look for. We know, you know, Matt LaFleur, where his coaching tree comes from, that the run game is going to be a part of this offense and the scheme. We know that they want to run the football based on just the personnel moves that they made. And, you know, the matchup does line up. I mean, the Vikings were dead last in the NFL in EPA run defense last year. They 88% of the carries against them gained positive yardage. That was the highest rate in the NFL. So it does kind of line up to if that defense isn't improved, that the Packers will be able to kind of do that and use this two-headed backfield. Just all comes down to, you know, do you get in the box with A.J. Dillon? Because we just don't know how many passes he's going to catch, you know, and how much like the overall value is going to be. It also could be a situation too where there's some fragility if they do get scripted out. I mean, what if there's an outcome where the Packers like don't perform at this peak apex, right? And they do fall behind. There's that kind of element too. So like, I think he's fine. He's right there like in that RB2, you know, flexious type area that makes total sense. And if you run into that game where he has one or two touchdowns, you're gonna be looking really good.
All right, let's move on to the next player on our list. It's Dameon Pierce, who has been certainly a hot topic in drafts, certainly a value in many of them. And I think everybody's very excited to have this asset, but he is a rookie and it is a game script at home against the Colts, where you figure the Colts should be up on them, which could get a little dicey perhaps for the usage of Dameon Pierce. Now, you've got him right now, Pat, ranked as RB26, so still certainly in that flex conversation. ECR has him at 29. Do you think Pierce is a good flex option this week, in your opinion?
Oh, man. Maybe this ranking is a bit of wish casting, Joe. And I don't know if I should even use the term wish casting, because I don't think I got Dameon Pierce anywhere. Like, he was going so ridiculously early in the drafts I've been in, like, recently. Fourth round, fifth round. Just, yeah, crazy. So I didn't get him anywhere. It's kind of a leap of faith about the usage to have him this high. I think that, you know, the way they used him in the preseason, I'm hoping that maybe he has a workhorse type role for the Texans. But yeah, there's a lot working against him. The Colts gave up the fifth fewest fantasy points to running backs last year, and I think they were third in defensive run DVOA. Like, I've got Pierce just ahead slightly of the New England running backs. I've got him just ahead of Breece Hall, whose usage we're not sure about, just ahead of CEH, which is probably a mistake. You know, I'm just hoping that he gets like 16, 18 touches in this game. But, you know, it is, I don't know. Like, Reeves, maybe you can set me straight on this one, because we know the implied point total for the Texans is not very high. Like, the touchdown outlook here is not great. And I'm not really expecting Pierce to have more than like 5 to 7 touchdowns this year. So I might be too high here.
Rich, let me put it to you this way. He's ranked ahead of some of those, quote, PPR backs, you know, the guys like Tony Pollard, Kareem Hunt. Would you feel better rolling those guys out week one, or would you feel better about Dameon Pierce with a theoretical backfield to himself in maybe a negative game script?
I mean, I think Pat's ranking is correct. Like, he's right. I think in that flex area this week, and, you know, I typically would chase the touchdown more than the guys that just kind of, you know, we don't really know for sure what kind of their touches are going to be, the guys that are really reliant on receptions. But that also hurts Pierce too, because we've got a team that's 8-point underdogs, 18-point team total, like Pat said. And he didn't play any of the long down and distances in the preseason. Like, he's probably going to have to earn that role as the season goes on in pass protection. Now, he was an excellent pass protector in college. Obviously, that may not translate, but Rex Burkhead played those long down distances in the preseason with the first team still. I still would anticipate that the first week. It's a terrible matchup because the Houston offensive line is awful still, and the Colts front seven is really good. I mean, Pat talked about it. I mean, they were eighth in yards per carry a lot of the running backs last year. They were really good in the pass game. They sit back and they play that zone coverage. You know, and they're going to do that again, you know, with Gus Bradley coming over and replacing Matt Eberflus. I think it's one of those situations where you just kind of, we know that, like, if they get inside the five, he'll be the guy. How often do they get there is the question. But him not having that passing game locked down, I think, is what keeps him in that kind of flexish type area.
And I believe from what I saw yesterday, Shaq Leonard seems to be trending in a better direction too, which is certainly important for that defense of Indianapolis. Let's get to the last running back we're going to talk about, the sixth guy on the list, Tony Pollard, who Pat has at RB 37, a little lower than consensus at 34. Now, Pat, when we're looking at this matchup, this is kind of how we started last year. We had the Dallas Cowboys and the Tampa Bay Bucks kicking off things. Now, it's not going to be a Thursday night game. This one's going to be a Sunday night contest. Do you see, once again, maybe Tony Pollard, just like last time, kind of being the more, exciting running back? Because it doesn't look like it from your rankings this week.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty bullish on him generally season long. And I think the appeal with Tony Pollard is that he's got standalone value. And if anything happens to Zeke, he's just going to smash. But last year, nothing happened to Zeke. He played all 17 games and Pollard averaged 8.7 carries and 3.1 targets a game. Now, like, you can make that sort of workload work for standalone value, but you have to have the matchup in your favor. And I don't think he does have it in his favor here against the Buccaneers. Their run defense in 2021, not quite as stingy as it had been previously, but still, like, well above average. They allowed the third fewest rushing yards. And a lot of opponents, as Rich knows, just don't even really bother trying to run against the Buccaneers. It's just kind of like beating your head against the wall. They've still got Vita Vea. Now they've got Akeem Hicks up front. They've got Lavonte David behind them. So it's like a really tough D to run against. And when you're getting just that partial share of the workload, like, it's hard to squeeze out fantasy points.
Well, Rich, is that maybe everything that Pat's saying more of a case for Tony Pollard? If you're not going to try to run into that line, then you're trying to throw the ball. Isn't that where Tony Pollard really excels, getting him out in space, catching the football?
Yeah, so Pollard is one of those guys that we kind of talked about at the beginning of the show. Like, he's a big reveal player. Like, we've heard all offseason that he's going to play more in the passing game, but we've heard that before in the course of many offseasons. He does have a little bit of a receiving background, and last year when he was split out in the slot or out wide, he actually was targeted at a highest rate per route run of all running backs. And when he played, he was inherently better. I mean, anyone with eyeballs saw that Tony Pollard was literally one of the most explosive players on this offense, and a lot more explosive than Ezekiel Elliott. The problem is, when you look at, like, the landscape of this game and what Dallas is coming into with all of their moving parts up front, you know, not having Tyron Smith, potentially having to play Tyler Smith in his first career start against this Bucs defense and a Todd Bowles defense that does nothing but blitz. They were first in the NFL in blitz rate last year. They blitzed Dak Prescott on 53% of his dropbacks last year. So do the Cowboys then want to entrust Ezekiel Elliott and his pass protection on those downs when they're going to be pass heavy? In this matchup a year ago, when you say, oh yeah, the Bucs were 31st in receiving points allowed to running backs, but because the Cowboys trust Ezekiel in those situations, he played a season high 83% of the snaps in that week one game, even though he didn't do anything statistically, but they trusted him in pass protection. So is it going to be a situation where we see a lot of Pollard and Zeke on the field together and Pollard's playing like a true slot role? Because that's what he's going to need. So, I mean, he's one of these guys that's just a huge reveal player. Yeah, because he doesn't really possess a lot of touchdown upside anyways. You know, you look at last year, he just 3 touches inside the 10 the entire season. He's an easy guy for me to kind of just, like, sit back on and say, like, all right, if I leave him on my bench and I see the usage, I know I have that moving forward. But I feel like there's just a lot of volatility and, like, definitely a really low floor here as well, to leave him on benches and go in a different direction.
Before we switch gears and talk about the wide receiver ranks, I want to remind everybody, if you're listening to the podcast, don't forget, you can watch it on YouTube as well. YouTube.com/fantasypros. That's the place to be. Make sure you, if you subscribe and you haven't already, please go and do it. I mean, I don't know what you're waiting for. 160K already have. So you're behind the pack. If you haven't already subscribed to our YouTube channel, you should do that right away, because not only are all the pods on there, but we've also got the live streams for Waiver Wire, the live streams we've got going on there for Start Sit. We've also got our Sunday live stream for AMAs on there. And all you have to do is click that little bell for notifications till it goes ding, so you know exactly when these things are going on. So, you know, life is busy, things happen, but you don't want to miss the content. I know you don't. And there's a perfect way to stay on top of things, and that's by subscribing to our YouTube channel at Fantasy Pros. Now let's switch gears to wide receiver here, and let's start with Mike Evans, who, of course, Pat has been throwing a little cold water on the last few days a little bit. This isn't a lot of cold water. This is like a very tiny, like a shot glass, I feel like. You've got him as wide receiver 10. ECR has him at 7. Now, Pat, this morning I was on Sports Grid talking about how I thought that this was a good matchup here for Evans because, you know, Trayvon Diggs and some of the corners there play a little fast and loose in Dallas, and sometimes that burns them many, many times, especially when you have a quarterback like Tom Brady. So why so low this week, potentially, on Mike Evans?
Yeah, I'm probably going to bump him up like a spot or two, Joe, now that it sounds like Godwin is not going to be playing. Like, we still weren't sure what was going on with Godwin until, like, yesterday he kind of dropped some clues that he was talking about, you know, being healthy for the second half of the season is more important. Didn't sound like a guy who was going to be out there on week one. So, with no Godwin, that maybe boosts the target outlook a little. But we talked about this, Joe. Like, Evans, over the first 6 years of his career, averaged just over 9 targets a game. And the last 2 years, it's been a shade under 7 targets a game. So, you know, he's managed to still keep it going as far as the efficiency and touchdowns, like 27 TDs the last couple of years. And that's kind of floated his value despite the smaller target shares. But like, they've still got Julio there. They do have Julio there now. They've got Russell Gage. One thing that kind of concerns me, yes, I know those Cowboys cornerbacks are ripe for the picking, but like, is he going to have time with the issues they're having at left guard and center? Like, are those guys going to be good enough to stop the pressure up the middle? Because Evans' average depth of target last year was 13 yards. You need some time to find a guy who's running those deeper routes. And, you know, we're going to see if the offensive line in the middle is a problem for Brady this year.
Rich, how about for you? Is Mike Evans a top 10 wide receiver this week, in your opinion, with the matchup?
Yeah, I think he's like a back end wide receiver 1. I mean, obviously Mike Evans always carries a little bit of, you know, touchdown contingency to his game. And, you know, you go back to this matchup a year ago, Trayvon Diggs actually boxed Mike Evans. I mean, he shattered him on 85% of his routes, only gave up one completion to Mike Evans for 10 yards. One of Trayvon Diggs' better games. We know he's a guy that will give up some big plays too, with the style he plays. But we've also seen Evans be kind of sensitive at sometimes to specific cornerback play, especially Marshawn Lattimore over the course of his career.
Yes, that is true.
But also, we saw in the playoffs, though, when the Bucs were so depleted, that Mike Evans is still one of the best receivers in the NFL. And if you're going to feed him double-digit targets like he got in the playoffs against guys like Darius Slay and Jalen Ramsey, he can still get over on anybody. And that's why I don't think, like, when you look at the wide receiver landscape, like, who are you going to move him down for? Like, right? Like who are you going to really bump him out of the top 10 for? Especially because when, you know, especially in week one, rankings tend to fall a little bit of ADP at the start of the year. And I feel like just when we hit that like kind of firewall of where like CeeDee Lamb was going off the board, it was like a big group of guys that you can say like, yeah, all these guys, the margin is very tight on these guys. So, I mean, yeah, I think it's really hard, especially with Godwin expected to be out. There could still be double digit targets here for him. And anytime Mike Evans is going to push double digit targets, like, I'm just going to just play for the ceiling.
Let's take a quick break in the action to tell you about Pristine Auction. Pristine Auction is the most trusted sports memorabilia auction site with an A+ Better Business Bureau rating. Auctions at pristineauction.com start at just $1, and each day there are over 1,000 autographed items available, so you win signed authentic signatures at affordable prices. Just last week, an autographed Justin Herbert jersey sold for just $110. What? That's crazy. Deals like this are happening all the time on pristineauction.com, and they have just about every player you could possibly want, including Tom Brady, Mahomes, and so many more. Every item on Pristine Auction comes with a certification of authenticity from the industry's most reputable authenticators, and you can upgrade your collection of signed memorabilia today and get $10 off your first item when you use the code fantasy. Again, that's one word, just fantasy, to be sure to sign up now at pristineauction.com/register. So here's what you do. You go to pristineauction.com/register and use that promo code fantasy, one word fantasy, because there are deals ending every single day that you're missing out on right now. So go get to it. Again, that's code fantasy for $10 off your first piece of signed memorabilia at pristineauction.com/register. And now back to the action. All right, I'm going to skip Cortland Sutton, who I know is on our list. I'm going to save him, keep him in my pocket for the rankings throwdown a little later. Let's talk about Marquise Hollywood Brown. Pat, you have him at wide receiver 22. Consensus has him at 16. Now, I kind of live a little closer to where you live here on Marquise Hollywood Brown. So talk to me about why this ranking is where it is this week for you.
Yeah, so I know that he is in a game with a high projected point total. A game that could very well be a shootout, and that there's probably going to be no Zach Ertz. We don't know about Rondale Moore, so it's possible that Marquise Brown gets a lot of targets in this one. But, like, I don't know. I mean, I just don't see Marquise as, like, a true wide receiver one type or a high-end wide receiver two. Like, that's just kind of my take on him. I mean, he's averaged 7.4 yards per target for his career. Like, to me, that just... For the type of game he plays, like that kind of home run hitter style, like, I mean, Marquez Valdez-Scantling has averaged 8.7 yards per target over the course of his career. Like, that's a number a lot better than Hollywood Brown. So I guess I've always felt that Brown is maybe a little bit overrated. Like, maybe it all clicks with the reunion with Kyler Murray. And, you know, now that there's no Hopkins early on, maybe no Ertz and Rondale Moore. You know, maybe it all just adds up to a smash game and, you know, he takes Legarius Sneed or whoever he's going against this week in his school. But I'm just a little bit hesitant. Like, I would definitely start him if I had him on any of my rosters.
Sure, because of the total at least.
Yeah, I'm just not counting on him to win me a game in week one.
Do you feel the same way, Rich, if you're starting Hollywood Brown this week, that you better find some floor somewhere else?
Potentially. I mean, that, you know, I'm always going to want that ceiling in my lineup anyway. So, I mean, sure, you know, he definitely possesses that here. I mean, it's a game environment you want attachment to. We talked about, like, the injuries, so there could be a little bit of a target uptick. I think the marriage here is sensational. Obviously, him going back to play with Kyler. I mean, since entering the league, Kyler has completed 42% of his passes on 30 yards or more down the field. That's number one in the NFL since he entered the NFL. His EPA per dropback on those throws is second behind only Justin Herbert. And the guy that accounted for all those targets, Christian Kirk, he accounted for 30 of those, you know, 82 targets. Like, those are going to go to Hollywood Brown now. Hollywood was that fantasy wide receiver one last year until Lamar Jackson got hurt, you know, on a weekly basis. So If the targets are going to be there, there's opportunity. The Chiefs were absolutely toasted a year ago by wide receiver ones. They were 29th in points allowed per game to opposing wide receiver ones. They are going to be starting a rookie, Trent McDuffie, at one of their quarterback spots. Legarius Sneed is going to play inside. You know, you got Rashad Felton on the outside. They're also replacing Tyrann Mathieu with Justin Reed. So, I mean, there's some moving parts in the Chiefs secondary, too, that could be a little bit vulnerable as well. So, I mean, yeah, there's always going to be, like, a little bit of a floor with a guy like Hollywood Brown. But with the targets in this game environment, like, I'm just firing him up.
Yeah, Monday afternoon, they were replaying the game in the playoffs between the Bills and the Chiefs. And that was a stark reminder of all the deficits at corner of the Kansas City Chiefs. That was a lot of wide open people and a lot of inopportune moments. Somebody that I think is going to be wide open a lot, hopefully, fingers crossed, is Mike Williams. Pat's got him at wide receiver 12. The ECR's got him at wide receiver 17. Look, you don't have to sell me here, Pat, but sell the other people who still might not believe in Mike Williams of why he's a wide receiver one this week.
It's funny. Rich was talking about the new season at the top of the show and, like, getting this new data so we don't have to talk about the same things over and over again. So I think I've mentioned on podcasts maybe 142 times that Mike Williams
was
the
143.
Yeah, that Mike Williams was the wide receiver one in a half point PPR through 5 weeks last season until he tweaked his knee a little bit in week five and then kind of slowed down for the next month and a half. So, like, he has given us, like, elite production over stretches before. And, like, I think all we need from him is good health this year. And then right off the bat, we get one of these AFC West shootout games that we've been all excited about with, you know, a high projected point total. You know, this could potentially be one of those last team with the ball wins, game. So I'm excited to like use him in this spot. Like, I think it's a great setup for him. And, you know, the Raiders outside cornerbacks aren't anything to fear.
Well, so. That was my big point I was going to make too. I know something talking about DFS show that we're going to do later on, D-Bro and I this week. You know, that's one of those things where you look at the mediocrity of the corners here when it comes to the Raiders. Rich, do you think that there's even a top 10 finish, maybe potentially or more, for Mike Williams this week?
Yeah, I mean, now remember, Gus Bradley's gone, you know, so those days of sitting in cover three and only rushing four are not, that's not going to be the defense that we see from this Raiders defense with Patrick Graham coming in. It's going to be a lot more versatile. Now, the back end, like you said, is just still, there's just not a lot of strong objective talent, you know, at cornerback for the Raiders still. So it's definitely going to have to still be schemed up. I'm very high on Justin Herbert, so I'm not going to be down on any of his wide receivers, you know, especially in a game that could get there and definitely pop. I'm a little bit concerned about the Raiders side a little bit because they definitely struggled in both games against the Chargers a year ago, and this Chargers defense is inherently improved, although J.C. Jackson's not going to play in this game. Mm-hmm. But that still exists in the range of outcomes here. So if we're going to be high on Justin Herbert, I'm going to be definitely high on one of his top three targets in the offense here too. So, I mean, yeah, I have no qualms of where Mike Williams is. And like I said, he's in that grouping of guys. Like, if Mike Williams outscored Michael Pittman, would anyone blink? If he outscored Cortland Sutton, would anyone blink? If he, like, you know, it's, we have that real tight margin of guys, like even Mike Evans, like in that group, like that group of like wide receiver seven to maybe like all the way you could stretch it to maybe like in the low wide receiver 20s, it's tightly packed.
All right, let's do one more here. Michael Thomas and Pat Fitzmaurice is standing firm on the show me something kid, or old man now at this point. I don't even know what we want to call Michael Thomas. You've got him as wide receiver 32. Consensus, much more bullish here. 24. So 8 spots difference. Now, obviously, it looks like you're still starting Michael Thomas this week from this ranking, Fitz. But why such trepidation here in this matchup against the Falcons, which would seem like, at least off the bat, a good first start to get back on track for a guy who hasn't played in a couple of years?
Well, you said it, Joe. Show me something. He's the guy who hasn't played in a couple of years. So
told me that before the show. Show me something today. Your work has been mediocre at best here lately. It's time for you to step. I was ranked as like the 42nd host or something. Pat had me. I had to convince him to move me into the top 40. It's true. True story.
I don't need a show me game from you, Joe, but I do need one from Michael Thomas. You know, he's dealt with the hamstring issue. He's never played with Jameis Winston before. Is Atlanta that good a matchup? Like, he's going to see a lot of Casey Hayward, who's, you know, one of the better corners in the league. So, like, I just need that show me game. I need to see the Michael Thomas of old, or at least, you know, 80% of the Michael Thomas of old before I'm ready to totally buy in.
How about for you, Rich? Are you going right back to the well with Michael Thomas? Are you kind of in the wait and see pattern the way Pat is?
Yeah, no, I think that's totally fair. I mean, there's a lot of things here we just don't know. One, I think the biggest thing is that he's missed the last couple of weeks with that hamstring injury. So, you know, when anytime a guy's coming back from a hamstring injury in week one, you always worry about that ramp up, right? Like, cause you know, guys like, you know, Edwin Porter's have shown that like when these guys have these hamstring injuries, the reoccurrence rate happens at the front of the season, like, you know, trying to go full speed again. Jameis Winston also missed a ton of the preseason with an ankle injury of his own. So how much work have these guys gotten together? He's going to be now sharing targets with actual talent at wide receiver for basically the first time in his career, you know, since he was a rookie, arguably, with Chris Olave and with Jarvis Landry. They might not need to throw a lot if, you know, the Falcons don't do their part. And like the two best players on the Falcons defense are their cornerbacks, Casey Hayward. But what about the best cornerback in the NFL last year, AJ Terrell? You know, allowed the lowest, you know, rating in coverage last year, arguably flew under the radar because he played for the Atlanta Falcons, but AJ Terrell by far the best cornerback in the NFL last year. So I have no problems with seeing like a show me game from Michael Thomas. I think he's very interesting. If you've got guys like, say, like maybe like a Devontae Smith, right? Drafted probably in that wide receiver three kind of area, plays the Lions, could be more of a potential shootout. Play a guy like Devontae Smith, you know, in that area. So I'm all for just like seeing something from Michael Thomas here.
All right. Good name, too, to throw out there of people trying to figure out. That was a very start sit show of you. Well done. We'll have to get to that tomorrow as well. Let's have a little throwdown, shall we, boys? And let's start with a controversial player when it comes to Pat Fitzmaurice. It's Courtland Sutton. So let's talk about him. Courtland Sutton right now currently is ranked pretty high. He's up at the wide receiver 14 and a half PPR on Fantasy Pros. The matchup against Seattle, certainly a one where we can write all the narratives we want, but at the end of the day, you got to play the game. So, Rich, Pat's gone first on a lot of these, but I want to get your take here first for a change. Courtland Sutton, higher or lower than 14?
I'm a little higher. You know, I think obviously he's in that bucket of guys we talked about that, you know, fit like that mold, that Mike Evans, AJ Brownish, T. Higgins, right? Like that area of guys. But the first thing is I'm really high on Russell Wilson and that we talked about, not for the season, but particularly this game, you know, going back to Seattle. I feel like there's, you know, that's definitely going to be huge. I mean, Russell Wilson also, like, the style of quarterback he is, you know, throwing the ball into the end zone and downfield is a complete overlap for a guy like Courtland Sutton. And when you look at the Seattle defense, like, where are they the worst at? And it's, they're one of the youngest cornerback groups in the NFL. I mean, they're going to be playing two rookies in Kobe Bryant and Tariq Woolen, significant snaps. Sidney Jones is a guy that, you know, was one of the worst cornerbacks in the NFL last year and really struggled. And Michael Jackson has bounced around multiple teams to the start of his career. I mean, those are the cornerbacks they're bringing to this party in a game where Russell Wilson, you know, Russell Wilson is ready to kind of let's ride. So, I mean, I think when you just look at the layout, like it just like I'm just going to keep following the trend here. And like I said, stay on the Russell Wilson train, look where it lines up. And then the matchup is just screaming like Seattle's cornerbacks are really coming into the season here, really vulnerable.
It's so fun to say. You know, I mean, I give him a lot of credit, too, because he's really he is pounding the table for the let's ride. I mean, he is just all day, every day. I hope he's making a lot of money off that. That's what I hope, because he could use it. You know, Russell Wilson certainly needs some extra dough. All right, let's talk to you, Pat Fitzmaurice. Courtland Sutton at 14. Dare I ask, are you higher or lower?
Yeah, so I've got him like in the low 20s. I'm taking my usual, you know, skeptical approach of Courtland Sutton. And I'm just you know, like maybe Rich hasn't heard me talk about this before, but I was a little worried that he just totally disappeared after Jerry Jeudy came back from the high ankle sprain last year, that he averaged like four targets a game in those last 11 regular season games. And, you know, like, I think Jeudy is good. I find it hard to separate the two. Thought it was kind of interesting that I was looking at season long player props to maybe get a few last bets down this morning on the, you know, my Betting Pros app. And I saw that BetMGM actually has Jerry Jeudy with the higher yardage and touchdown totals than Courtland Sutton this year. So, which makes me wonder if we're walking into like a Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods trap last year when, you know, Kupp had the higher player prop numbers preseason, and maybe we should have been heeding that because obviously Kupp was the much more valuable player last year. So I get what Rich is saying. It is a great matchup for sure. I should probably move Sutton up a little bit, you know, but I just like I'm a little hesitant right now. I'm getting prepared for Derek Brown and Andrew Erickson to shove it in my face if Sutton is great.
Yeah, Tuesday morning could be rough around the office.
Where do you have Russ ranked? Can I ask? I know we didn't do quarterbacks, but
like, Russ at like 8 for the season. Oh, for this,
no, this week?
I think
the consensus is 7. I know.
Yeah, let's see.
Rich, where do you have him? Well, Fitz is looking.
Yeah, I have him also at 7 this week.
Okay, so you're with the consensus on that one. How about you, Fitz?
Oh, for the week,
I would imagine I have 7 or 8, right? You probably even that same.
I've got him 8. I've got him in.
Okay, so there you go. There you have it. All right, let's move on to another player. Let's go to Amon-Ra St. Brown, a guy who finished the season about as good as you possibly could. This matchup we mentioned earlier has at least some potential, as we all know. He is ranked at wide receiver 29. Rich Rebar, insane. You have him higher or lower? Same.
Way higher. Same. No, I said insane.
Okay. Oh, insane. Oh, I thought you said same. I was like, whoa, that's not going to be fun. But good, you got him way higher. Let's go. Why?
Like unbelievably higher. Like almost borderline wide.
I'm taking notes as I readjust rankings.
Yeah, I mean, he's one guy I feel like I just don't have on enough teams. I mean, we saw when Ben Johnson took over last year, and a lot of people kind of are going to draw the corollary to DeAndre Swift and T.J. Hockenson being out. But Ben Johnson and Amon-Ra St. Brown has talked about the difference that Ben Johnson made, you know, calling plays and getting him in situations to where he can win. And why would anyone want the Detroit Lions passing game to go back to what it was the front half of last year? They tried to throw a bunch of targets at TJ Hockenson, DeAndre Swift, and it sucked. Why shouldn't the argument be the inverse argument of it?
I agree. I spent all of July and most of August defending the honor of Amon-Ra St. Brown to that same logic that you were saying, which is everybody keeps throwing out the, well, this guy wasn't there, that guy's in there. I was like, what about the guy that was there and was producing for what was an absurd consistent level that we've almost never, like, he was a Cooper Kupp level of catch receive kind of statistics in terms of targets and actually receiving them and getting yards. And it seems like nobody seemed to care.
Yeah. And then, we immediately saw happen right again in the preseason. He was targeted on 37% of his routes in the preseason, 3.3 yards per out run on that small sample. But then the matchup here, if this game's going to get there, I mean, Jonathan Gannon comes from that Matt Eberflus tree. Like the Eagles play just like a ridiculous amount of zone. It's what they're going to do. They played zone in 72% of their coverage snaps last year. It was sixth highest in the league. Amon-Ra St. Brown led not only the team in targets against zone coverage, he led the entire NFL in targets against zone coverage the final 6 weeks of the season. This is like from a DFS stance, like a real natural bring back if you're running like Jalen Hurts, like Arthur Juan, Dallas Goedert stacks, like really easy to bring back. I feel just like there's like people have a foot out on Amon-Ra St. Brown because everyone loves to play the regression game. But I think that he showed us last year, like he's an absolute talent. He fits this offense to a T. Fits Jared Goff to where he wants to throw the football to a T. And then adding a guy like DJ Shark is only going to create more space for him. I mean, listen, I'm genuinely scared that I don't have him on enough rosters.
I love it. I love it. Amon-Ra St. Brown for you, Fitz. Let's talk about it. Wide receiver 29, higher or lower?
I got to move him up for sure. Reeves is making great points about the usage. And like, even with all that zone, you figure the way he runs, where he runs his routes, he's probably going to be running more towards the middle of the field in the coverage of Avante Maddox and avoiding those outside corners, Darius Slay and James Bradbury, right? Which is like certainly good for Amon-Ra. Yeah, like I've got to bump that. I mean, this guy's a stud, and he kind of showed it last year. Now, like I've been getting pumped up watching him on Hard Knocks, remembering all the guys who got drafted ahead of him. Like this guy's out for blood, so I should move him up. Probably in season long, too.
You know what's funny, Pat? All the same people that keep telling you, oh, he was only so good because, you know, Hawkinson wasn't there, this guy wasn't there, and that guy wasn't there. They're the same people that want to tell you volume is king and volume is king. Well, volume is king. How about this guy? How about Amon-Ra St. Brown? How about him being the king of volume last year?
You know what? The funny thing was, Joe, like I thought people were going to have Amon-Ra ranked really high because of the way he finished last year coming into the season. And I was kind of surprised that he was, showing up in the 20s.
Because he's a Lion. I think at the end of the day, it's Jared Goff and he's a Lion. I think no matter what we do, it's hard to shake decades of negativity around an organization. And rightfully so, they've earned it. Yeah. They've earned that.
I just figured after the hot finish last year, he was going to be overrated coming into the season. And really, he's kind of been underrated all offseason.
Yeah, agreed. He's been a good value. Hopefully you got some shares. All right, last guy in the throwdown. Let's have some tight end discussion here. Let's talk about Dallas Goedert. Now, this is going back to that same game we just talked about. Dallas Goedert right now is tight end 7 on the board. Fitz, let's go with you with this one first. Dallas Goedert, higher or lower than 7?
I think that's where I am with him. And it's like maybe I should have him higher because I know the Lions gave up the second most receiving yards to tight ends last year. But then again, the Lions cornerbacks are awful too. Like where do you begin to attack this? There are so many good options for attacking the Lions through the air. And how many yards do we think Jalen Hurts is going to throw for? Like 350, 400? I don't think so. So, no, you know, I mean, not.
Like I'll take the under on that number if you got it.
Yeah.
Show me on Betting Pros where that is. I like to bet that under.
Right. I mean, if you drafted Goddard, you're starting him. Like, there's no question about it. But I'm just, like, kind of in line with the rankings. Maybe I should be higher, but I don't know.
Rich, how about you when you look at Dallas Goedert, is this appropriate or are you higher or lower than him?
Yeah, I'm a little higher. And he's a guy I want to have some conviction on the guys I was high on this offseason. And he was a guy I was severely high on. I was calling him arbitrage George Kittle for a long time, because, you think of the offenses they play and the type of quarterbacks they play with, where their probably season long targets will probably be similar. And you look at Goddard last year when post Zach Ertz trade, he ran a pass route in 80% of the Eagles dropbacks. He had 25% of the team targets. I mean, those would have been second rung tight ends for the full season, but you add Arthur Juan, so you can't really get a big bump. But big playability, almost 15 yards per catch, 11 yards per target. I believe one of my takes has been that the Eagles have really kind of set themselves up to push Jalen Hurts. Remember this game when they played the Lions last year is a big inflection point of the season where they kind of turtled and realized what they needed to do to survive the course of the 2021 season. But now the way they've structured their team is they need to find out if Jalen Hurts is the guy they absolutely want to be married to moving forward with the allotment of picks they have moving forward. And when you look at this Eagles schedule, the front nine games, I mean, it is absolutely sensational. I believe they're going to push him and they're going to see what Jalen Hurts has. And you saw a little bit of this in the preseason. Again, I know with preseason, but they came out that first game of preseason and they just called 10 straight pass plays. Like, I genuinely believe that they're going to be more aggressive than they were to close last year. And if they are going to be more aggressive, like more aggressive against the Lions is music to my ears. And a team that, like, really, like Pat alluded to, they were bad against tight ends. They're bad against everybody. But I think this is going to be kind of the red zone guy that in this offense. And I just want to be a little bit, like, kind of said bullish and have some conviction on a guy that I was bullish on over the course of the offseason.
Now, whenever we do a show here, we always talk football after, we talk football before, we took football during the show. It's what we do. But before the show started today, you were talking a little bit about AJ Green being a sneaky guy in your rankings. So tell the people why that is this week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like there's a bunch of old guys this week that we could see pop. You know, guy brought up Randall Cobb too before the show. But yeah, you just look at the situation. We talked about that Chiefs-Cardinals game potentially being a game that could kind of pop. It's got the highest game total of the week. The amount of injuries the Cardinals have elevates AJ Green. Like, he's going to be a full-time player in this game. He's going to be on the field the entire game. You're catching him at the start of the season, so we know he's going to be freshest. There's no DeAndre Hopkins. We talked about the Chiefs cornerback situation a little bit as well. And, you know, there was moments last year where AJ Green did hit. He averaged 9.2 yards per target, almost 16 yards per catch. He was a vertical component in this offense. I feel like, I don't know where he's ranked. I don't know what the ECR is on him, but I feel like he's definitely probably like, he should be ranked in like the wide receiver four flexus type area. And I bet he's ranked severely lower.
Severely lower. You want to take a guess without looking?
I said 70s when we were on the show.
You were right. It is 70 exactly. That's why you're Lord Reeves, because you know these things. Number 70 right now, AJ Green. So if you're in a deeper league, and you're looking for a flyer, maybe somebody's not healthy for you as a flex, maybe you listen to Rich Rebar, throw him in a lineup, see what happens.
Let's dig into the listener mailbag.
Okay, let's hit our listener mailbag. This is fresh from our Discord, which again, it's free to join, fantasypros.com/chat. Join our Discord, hang out. By the way, tomorrow we have a fun announcement coming about our Discord channel. Again, we're bringing back a contest for all of our Discord people, so listen carefully. Go join now so you can be a part of it. FantasyPros.com/chat. This is right from there. This is from Ortiz989. Should I drop Julio Jones for Michael Gallup? That is the question. I understand the thought process of Michael Gallup being potentially that number two target eventually here as health gets a little better and improves for the Dallas Cowboys wideout. But are you ready to make that move here? Rich, do you want to drop Julio for Michael Gallup?
No, for a couple of reasons. Well, one, I'm never the one that someone's on the injury optimism game. You're picking a player that's already hurt. We don't know when Michael Gallup is going to play. His surgery came after Chris Godwin's. It was in February. So 9 months, I'm trying to do the math, when that's going to be. But we don't know when he's going to play. So you're going to use a roster spot on a guy not playing? I mean, that's not on my to-do list.
All right, Pat Fitzmaurice, the guy who we don't know when he's going to get well or the guy that we don't know when he's going to get hurt. How do you decide between these two?
Yeah, I'm kind of with Reeves on this one, even though I'm not wildly optimistic about Julio, just wondering how he's going to produce when Mike Evans is there and when Godwin's going to be back eventually. But yeah, I'm sort of the fade injury optimism type myself. And trading into a guy like that, like, it's just a guy you're going to be looking to drop in a couple of weeks anyway, when you have some shiny new object you want to grab or need to make injury replacements. So I'm not looking to really get a guy who is hurt now and then isn't going to be like a primary target when he gets back.
Fair enough. Obviously, like I said, join our Discord, fantasypros.com/chat. Upgrade your Fantasy Pros account and you can be part of stages. Tonight, Bogman and I have one. I know Pat does them. Andrew does them. Derek Brown, you can come on there and talk football with us. Ask us questions. You have access to our AMA channels, which are super awesome as well. Also, don't forget, we've got my playbook rocking and rolling for everybody. It's up and running for week one. put your teams in there, fantasypros.com/myplaybook, and check out the cheat sheets tool to help you set your lineups and, of course, get all your waiver wire ads in time. And, of course, go check out our guest, Lord Reeves, on the Twitter machine. He's Rich Rebar. He does phenomenal work over at Sharp Football. Rich, it's so great to have you here. Thanks again for joining us on the Fest, too. I'm sorry I wasn't on that segment because, you know, I love hanging out with you and talking football, and I hope AJ Green smashes in every lineup you have him. That's what I hope. I'd like to thank the sponsors of today's show, including Owner's Box. Head over to ownersbox.com/home/fantasypros and sign up today to claim your free entry. Again, there's a $20,000 first place prize and over $100,000 in total prizes on Owner's Box in week one. So sign up today at ownersbox.com/home/fantasypros. And also don't forget about Pristine Auction. Check out pristineauction.com/register. Again, that's pristineauction.com/register and use the code fantasy. That's one word, fantasy, at pristineauction.com/register, so you can get $10 off your first item of sports memorabilia from Pristine Auction. That'll do it for us, but the story of the game goes on. For Rich Rebar and Pat Fitzmaurice, I'm Joey P. We'll see you next time, kids.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.